I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In 2008, a team of coders decided they would declare financial independence from a struggling central bank system in the midst of a recession. They put their computing knowledge to the test, and soon, Bitcoin was born. The cryptocurrency movement quickly evolved from its humble beginnings and transformed into a mainstream global phenomenon. Today, Bitcoin is still the most valuable, selling for around $60,000 a pop at last check. That's up from just a few cents a coin back when it launched. Even though cryptocurrency is catching on in the mainstream, the world surrounding it is still confusing to millions of consumers. We've got a lot to learn about how cryptocurrency operates and whether it can be sustained in the long term. For more on this, I'm joined by Jean Volpicelli. He is a journalist at Wired UK and author of Cryptocurrency: How Digital Money Could Transform Finance. We'll talk about cryptocurrency's popularity around the world and where it's going from here. That's all coming up next.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15, discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. Jean Volpicelli, welcome to Business Wars.
Thank you, David, for having me. How are you doing?
I am fine. Very interesting writing that you've done on this subject. Cryptocurrency, I think, is safe to say, can be rather cryptic to the average listener. In layman's terms, how does this stuff work?
Well, I mean, the idea was to create a sort of digital cash system, right? So blending the digital elements of systems like Visa, for instance, so the quickness and the online element of those kind of networks with the immediacy of cash, which meant in this case essentially to remove all middlemen, all intermediaries. Every single company, like a bank or a payment company like Visa itself, and replace it with a decentralized network of computers, none of which was in charge of validating this transaction, but all of them in a way collectively did it. The reason for doing that was, first of all, to remove middlemen, just because middlemen were supposed to be rent-seeking, rent-extracting parasites, in a way. So they would extract banking fees or whatever kind of transfer fees payment companies extract. But also, the idea was that every middleman can be corrupt or can be threatened, and in a way can be convinced or browbeaten into blocking certain transactions. And that's something that the people behind Bitcoin didn't want to happen. They want something that was, in a way, unstoppable, a form of payment that no one could stop.
It wasn't just the intermediaries, though. I mean, one of the big differences between Bitcoin or cryptocurrency and, say, fiat currency that a government issues is that you don't have any government issuing this currency. And that's something that was very, that decentralization was very appealing from the start.
They want to get rid of government sponsor central banks and replacing them with a very mathematical base, they say, backed by maths system in which you had a very exact monetary policy in a way. You had a certain fixed number of monetary units of coins, in this case, of Bitcoins. You only have 21 million Bitcoins ever, which are minted at a regular pace, and that's it. There's no discretionality there.
We've seen an explosion of cryptocurrency over the past decade, and I'm wondering how much of that is people who heard about it and wanted to get rich quick versus, say, some other force. Why do you think cryptocurrency's popularity exploded?
In a way, at some point, Bitcoin starting to be regarded as a form of investment, as an asset, as opposed to a currency, an asset whose value was priced, was determined by the meeting of supply and demand online in a totally unregulated fashion. And so it was continuous roller coaster, and the price could really skyrocket overnight and, of course, crash very often. But a lot of people, of course, got in just because it seemed to be a new get-rich-quick, as you said, asset class.
But now, Jean, do you think that that's why we've seen these skyrocketing prices? As, you know, you look at Bitcoin and it's upwards of $60,000 per Bitcoin, right? What's been driving that valuation?
Paradoxically, I think the last year's rise in Bitcoin's price, which has really shot to unprecedented levels, has been driven much more by actual regulation, or at least the arrival of more institutional actors. Hmm. So yeah, it seems to be that the big shots are coming in. Uh-huh. So it actually seems to be driven much more by Bitcoin gaining some kind of credibility among the more traditional crowd, or at least the moneyed crowd. So in a way, that's actually a kind of reversal. It's not driven by amateurs anymore. It's driven by the big guys.
And this sort of feeds into itself, doesn't it? I mean, as you see the valuation of Bitcoin rise, that sort of fuels this idea of Bitcoin or cryptocurrency as a sort of asset class unto itself. And that in and of itself, as you're describing, sort of pushes the price point ever higher.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. That, I mean, that it's a virtuous or vicious cycle, depending on what your point of view. And as I said, it's very fickle, right? So I think that every single rumor, any single piece of news, the Bitcoin crowd, the cryptorati, tend to call it also food, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Can any of those things can drive the price very, very high up or very lower down? It really depends on the spur of the moment.
Yeah, that's an interesting acronym, FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Well, today you have competing cryptocurrencies like Dogecoin and Shiba Inu that are tied to these more obscure internet inside jokes. What's the significance of these meme coins, as they're sometimes referred to?
At some point in 2020, I don't know why, but there are several competing theories about why it happened just during the pandemic when people were at home and bored. Mm-hmm. Whatever the reason, there was this bizarre rise of meme coins. Every day there was a new coin, a new kind of cryptocurrency whose properties very often were just that they were fun. They were associated with stuff like, as you said, like Dogecoin. Dogecoin is actually a bit older than that, but Shiba Inu is a sort of new dog coin, if you wish. Mm-hmm. But there were also coins named after vegetables or food. There was a spaghetti coin at some point, a yam coin. The weirdness just permeated the whole sphere. And every day there would be a new coin launched, and its popularity would really depend on how fun the joke was.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see when Elon Musk began tweeting about Dogecoin. What's his role in all of this?
I mean, Elon Musk, I suppose, is like the poster person, the poster boy of how volatile the whole sphere is, right? Mm-hmm. Every time Elon Musk mentions one specific cryptocurrency, the price of that cryptocurrency just shoots up. Every time, of course, he speaks out against a certain cryptocurrency, he did it with Bitcoin, for instance, the value crashes. Of course, there have been some studies into the actual long-term effect of Musk's pronouncements about crypto. The effect is not that marked, really. Elon Musk has a kind of meme lord streak about him, right? He really enjoys it. But I also think it's a kind of experiment in terms of what he can really accomplish just by shooting the crap.
At the same time, this sort of underscores what's happening, that sort of interconnectivity between cyber currencies or cryptocurrencies, as we've been calling them, and internet culture. Why do you think that there is this relationship between internet culture and cryptocurrency and finance?
There are several trends all taking place at once here. For instance, look at what happened with the GameStop short squeeze. Mm-hmm. Stocks of GameStop, which was actually an ailing, struggling video game retailer, were just pumped to the moon, as the cryptorati would have it, as a kind of form of joke or as a form of perverse revenge on hedge funds just through social media, right? So people using the Robinhood app would convene on Reddit and decide, well, let's just pump GameStop.
Yeah.
There seems to be the gamification of finance, which has been driven partly possibly by cryptocurrency itself, by the way. It does look a bit like a strange casino. Partly by the, I'd say, the user interface of some apps, like Robinhood itself or other similar apps that usually, I don't know, will reward your investment choices with confetti animations and some kind of funny sounds. And again, also, there is right now a very explicit nexus between investment/cryptocurrency and gaming, like real video games. There are video games where you can earn cryptocurrency units. So it's a big mash. I'm not sure what's going on there, but internet culture, video games, online finance, cryptocurrency, memes, Elon Musk tweets are all becoming part of a big continuum where at the bottom of it all, I suppose, there is a kind of nihilist panache. There is this idea that was in a way the foundation of some of the early cryptocurrency movements, which said, actually, if you look at it, money is just a construct. Mm-hmm, all that mm-hmm. is behind money's value is people's beliefs, is people's wish to own or wish to dump their specific currency. So if a lot of us online on Reddit, on Robinhood, on Discord, on Twitter decide to pump this coin or this stock,
right,
we are going to create value out of thin air. It's a bit nihilistic. It's very fun.
It's very interesting. You've used a couple of words here that I'm just going to have to put in my dictionary because you talk about this sort of nihilistic chic or panache, I think was the word that you used,
yeah,
which says a lot right there. But then you add to that NFTs, these non-fungible tokens that are entering the scene, and would you say Bitcoin-style technology, right?
So if you think about Bitcoin or other early cryptocurrencies as money, or in some cases as stocks, you can think of NFTs as possibly art in a way, because they are unique. And so this property, this way of creating these tokens that are non-fungible, because there's only one of each kind,
right,
has led the people in the cryptosphere to wrap a lot of narrative around these tokens, treating them as stand-ins for collectibles or for art, digital art. Even if anyone can download that video, you are the owner of the, in a way, the copyright to that video. Of course, none of this is regulated. None of this is really, does really make sense.
This is really fascinating stuff. We're talking with Jean Volpicelli. He is a journalist at Wired UK and the author of Cryptocurrency, How Digital Money Could Transform Finance. Now, when we come back, we'll be talking about cryptocurrency's impact on a global scale. Stick with us. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. We get support from Airbnb. Staying in an Airbnb is often one of my favorite parts of a trip, especially on business travel. Instead of slogging to another hotel and waiting in line after you've been driving or flying all day, there is nothing better than landing in a place that, well, really feels like a home away from home. Maybe you've stayed in an Airbnb before and thought to yourself, you know, this actually seems pretty doable. Maybe my place could be an Airbnb. Well, I'm here to tell you it could be. You could be sitting on an Airbnb and not even know it. It might be as simple as starting with your spare room, or maybe even your whole place when you're away. Say you and your family are headed away for a much-deserved spring break. Well, why not Airbnb your place and make some extra money towards the trip? Win-win. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Welcome back to Business Wars. Our guest is Jean Volpicelli. He is a journalist at Wired UK, and he's reported extensively on cryptocurrency around the world. Jean, we've got a pretty limited view of cryptocurrency here in the US. How popular is crypto in the rest of the world?
Well, actually, I would say that right now, the US is becoming one of the main like hubs for cryptocurrency following a pretty recent Chinese crackdown on cryptocurrency activities within China. But yeah, you're right. There are other countries where cryptocurrency is used actually as a currency in a way. I'd say mostly in the developing world, in places like Vietnam or Nigeria, cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, but also other cryptocurrencies are often used for peer-to-peer trading, but also for remittances, transfer, even in Cuba. Strange enough, cryptocurrency is really, in a way, living up to its initial promise of acting as a currency, as a kind of money. El Salvador adopted Bitcoin as its legal tender. So now there are two currencies in El Salvador. One is the US dollar and one is Bitcoin. So essentially, they are on the same footing.
Do you ever see us getting to a place where people are using crypto, like on everyday purchases, you know, gas, groceries, that kind of thing?
I think it's much more likely that we would use some kind of different kind of crypto, not something like Bitcoin or Ether, but more like something that could be issued by Facebook, for instance, like Facebook Libra, something like that, or something similar to that, if not Facebook itself. So some form of digital currency or even cryptocurrency, if you wish. Possibly. I'm not sure we will get to a place where we use Bitcoin the way we use pounds or dollars or euros.
Does that come to a question of trust? Or why do you think that is, that people would not embrace it as a kind of a standard for transactions?
The way you have to look at it is, I don't want to be patronizing, right? But El Salvador, what does El Salvador have to lose? It is an economy which is not necessarily the pinnacle of stability or prosperity. It is already a dollarized economy, so it doesn't have its own currency. It was already depending on someone else's monetary policy in a way. So it makes sense for some countries in the developing world, in the global south, to embrace cryptocurrency because in some cases it's not as bad as their own currency or the currencies they're using, which are possibly foreign currencies such as the dollar, for their own ends, I mean. But in some Western countries, it's a bit different, right? I mean, why would British people start using Bitcoin instead of the pound? There's no real reason. There is no wild fluctuation in the pound's value as opposed to what might happen in Panama or in El Salvador.
I take your point. And, you know, there is one place that is not embracing crypto in a big way, and that's China. As you well know, I've taken some pretty draconian measures trying to limit the influence of cryptocurrency behind its borders. Why the crackdown there in China?
Let's sort of outline the situation here. What's happened is that China used to be home to 70% at some point of Bitcoin mining. The mining is the process through which the Bitcoin infrastructure, the decentralized ledger, and the ping in Bitcoin is maintained and also through which new Bitcoins are created. Mm-hmm. The problem with mining, of course, is that it's very energy consuming. It requires a lot of electricity because you need to essentially amass a lot of expensive computers in a warehouse and keep them constantly running in order to carry out this mining process. So that might be one of the reasons why China was a bit against it. China seems to be quite serious about its environmental goals. But of course, there is a wider point there, which is, I mean, Bitcoin was created to be anonymous, an anonymous source of value, which was beyond the purview of governments. And that's not something China would like. And on top of that, you have to remember that China is currently piloting its own central bank digital currency, the digital mm-hmm. yuan, right? Mm-hmm. So what the digital yuan is a kind of electronic money that is backed directly by China's central bank as opposed by commercial banks or payment mm-hmm. companies. It is expected to become a means of total control of China economic life by the government.
Well, now, you also mentioned earlier that one of China's concerns was environmental, and we've heard a lot of conversation around how cryptocurrencies take a pretty hefty amount of computing power to get those new coins, and that is contributing to climate change in a big way, which raises the further question, how sustainable do you see this virtual currency?
Well, right now, at least Bitcoin and many of the other cryptocurrencies using a similar mining process is certainly not sustainable, right? It's not sustainable in terms of emission and in terms of energy consumption. In terms of emission, we know that only, I think, 34% of the energy going into Bitcoin mining comes from renewable resources. The kind of energy consumption we're talking about here is truly massive. I think the Cambridge University calculated that every year Bitcoin mining consumes as much energy as the whole of Philippines.
Yeah, I read that report. It was staggering. Yeah, right.
And so if you calculate that, a majority of that is also producing carbon emissions. That's not good, right? But there has been certainly a movement to make Bitcoin slightly greener. I think that a lot of the Bitcoin miners based in the US are pretty aware of the kind of original sin of Bitcoin, and they want to use more and more renewable energy, so hydro mm-hmm. energy or solar energy. And there is certainly a kind of public backlash against Bitcoin mining that seems to be driving it even further. So if you think about Elon Musk himself, he announced at some point earlier this year that he would accept Bitcoin payments for Teslas, and then he recanted that on the grounds that he didn't want, he who is a champion of solving climate change, he didn't want to contribute to climate change by endorsing Bitcoin, which he regarded as a threat to climate. Well, but also what he's doing now, he's working with associations of North American Bitcoin miners to make Bitcoin more sustainable. There is still a massive problem in terms of sheer energy consumption, because consuming energy is going to, in a way, distort the market to make energy, even if it's renewable, more expensive.
But it does seem to be, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it seems to be almost an existential threat to crypto. I mean, if this cannot get more sustainable, is there the possibility that crypto might eventually phase out?
Crypto itself, as a whole, I'm not sure. I'll tell you why. But I think it's mostly a Bitcoin problem. So Bitcoin is the first cryptocurrency, the most popular, the most valuable. Mm-hmm. And it's also a very rigid, very ideologically rigid coin, in a way, cryptocurrency and community behind it. So no one wants to really renounce mining, which is regarded as a very secure way of maintaining the blockchain and making sure that cannot be changed, cannot be attacked by a hacker. But a lot of other cryptocurrencies, including Ethereum, are now are using different systems that do not require this expenditure, this consumption of mm-hmm. energy. Mm-hmm. Systems called, for instance, proof of stake, which is much more based on using deposits, essentially. you essentially just stake a certain amount of the currency, and if you try to hack the blockchain or you try to act dishonestly, you lose your collateral. Of course, Bitcoin extremists, Bitcoin maximalists will tell you that proof of stake is not as secure as mining.
John, this reminds me, you can almost take this full circle, because when our conversation began, we were talking about these big dreams, big ideas, all ideologically based, challenging the financial system, taking some power away from the intermediaries, the big banks, you know, during a global recession. And now you have entities like Bitcoin valued at over $1 trillion and other forms of cryptocurrency also pretty costly to buy into. Given all of this, as you stand back as a reporter who's covered this, do you think the original mission was accomplished, or is it still a work in progress?
I don't know. I think it is being accomplished in a piecemeal fashion, right? So certainly whoever designed the original Bitcoin white paper in 2008, whoever hid behind the pseudonym of Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator of Bitcoin, they might be nodding along with El Salvador in terms of how Bitcoin managed to become a kind of currency. In other ways, I would say that the rise of Bitcoin as a form of investment owned by, even by institutional actors now, I wouldn't call it a perversion, but certainly was not the main mission of Bitcoin. It's a kind of diversion, at least. Even if it might be a diversion that over time turns out to be good, just because, as we said, speculation was considered good as a way to make new currencies, cryptocurrency, private currencies, become more valuable and gain acceptance among the wider public. I'd say it's still a work in progress, really. But some parts of the grand project, the grand scheme, have been implemented, even if imperfectly.
John Volpicelli is a journalist at Wired UK and the author of The Wired Guide, Cryptocurrency, How Digital Money Could Transform Finance. You can check out his latest writing at wired.co.uk and over on wired.com. John, thanks so much. It's been great to talk with you.
Thank you, David.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Episode 7 of Crypto Wars for Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Kelly Kyle produced this episode. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Dave Schilling is our producer. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.